Well, what a week. It's one of those times when the Christian Holy Week and the Jewish Passover roughly coincide. And I'm going to relate these two events and journeys together. A rabbi acquaintance of mine and a Methodist minister acquaintance put together a joint service and called it Eastover. And both of them got into trouble, incidentally, so I think you really have to come to a Unitarian Universalist congregation to hear a legitimate Eastover celebration. We all know the story of Holy Week and the Christian version of Jesus coming into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday because he's greeted by hosannas, and palms are used to fan, to lay down before his way, and there's an incredible sense of welcome. And through the journey of that week, from welcome to teaching, to hanging out with his friends, to living, to Maundy Thursday, which is the day and night of the Last Supper, to Good Friday and the act of betrayal on Thursday and trial and execution on Friday, it's a very human journey. And if you take it, just no miracles involved, just take the story as a story for a moment. Think what it's like for a human being to feel extraordinarily welcome and celebrated, to be a celebrity, and then to find life turning against him, and to find troubles, betrayal by the very closest of his comrades, other members of his core group just backing away, saying, I knew you during the good days, but the Romans are after you now, and I'm not sure I know you anymore. And when in fact the one joke and pun in the Gospels, when Jesus turns to Peter and says, "Peter, you are the rock upon which I will build my church," the word Peter means in the Greek was Petrus, and the name and the rock are a pun, and the reference is an irony because he's anything but a rock. He, depending on which version of the gospel you read, he denies knowing Jesus two or three times during the telling of the story. And yet, he still comes back to be the founder of the church for all of his human fear. But let's go back to Jesus for a moment. He suffers denial and betrayal. He suffers trial and slings and no arrows, but slings and lashes, a crown of thorns and a crucifixion. And in this, he has a very human reaction. He feels despair. For all the people that teach all of the time that faith is constant, I give you Good Friday, where Jesus cries out in the words of the 22nd Psalm, "Father, Father, why hast thou abandoned me?" So for any of you who sometimes feel weak or imperfect because you've lost faith in life or in yourselves, and it feels somehow wrong, I commend to you the example of the Gospels and Good Friday. Because if Jesus can get scared and feel alone and isolated and betrayed, who are any of us to think, "Well, no, I've got to have perfect faith and a positive attitude all of the time." But then there is this quick journey from "Father, Father, why hast thou forsaken me?" to resignation, acceptance, and peace. This same abandoning Father from only a paragraph before, "Into thy hands I commend my spirit." That itself is a spiritual journey. The whole Holy Week is a spiritual journey of one person as an exemplar, But it's also a spiritual journey for kind of every man and every woman, where oftentimes our births are celebrated. We are welcomed into our world with often hosannas and the moral equivalent of baby showers. We are celebrated. We lead our lives, and we come to moments that we feel that we have huge achievement and recognition and get the little soccer trophy just for showing up. And there are moments when all of us, if we have lived lives, feel that we have had moments of failure of the expectations of others, failures of our own values and our own expectations. And there are, for most people, moments of what the Jesuits called midnight of the soul, times when the darkness just seems to close in and there is Father, Father, Mother, Mother, why hast thou forsaken me? How can I feel this alone on a beautiful day? How can I have a midnight of the soul while in a crowd on a beautiful afternoon? But those moments come to people who live. And as does peace, as does behind the fear, a sense of acceptance, a sense of into thy hands, however you want to fill in the rest of it, God or life or universe, I commend my spirit. It's a spiritual journey. It's a spiritual journey also in the Passover story. And we all know the Passover story. Cecil B. DeMille told us twice, in two iterations, one of them silent and one of them that should have been. Because Edward G. Robinson, trying to do the accent, just really didn't work out that well. And Yul Brynner was, I thought, a little bit off, and only Charlton Heston can really do the part. But you know the story. It's the story of a people born in slavery in Egypt, suffering under the lashes of slavery, having living deaths, and coming out of that slavery through the Red Sea onto the desert in a search for a new life in a new land. And the people who left Egypt did not live to enter the Promised Land except for the scouts who went over and came back. But the people left the flesh pots of Egypt. They broke their chains and they went out into the desert to wander and to live because freedom was worth it. Because a future for their children was worth the sacrifice of the moment. So it becomes, in the Jewish tradition, a story of the birth and the rebirth of a people. And when I say rebirth, I use that term very intentionally because, in my view, the story of Passover, again, you don't need miracles to understand it, is the story of every life. We are, most of us, conceived in, there are a couple of Petri dish exceptions, but most of us were conceived in the darkness of a womb, born through a wet canal, which is what the parting of the sea symbolized. And if you think that I'm making this up with my dirty 21st century Freudian mind, I just refer you to Song of Songs and understand that they had all of the symbolism and all of the archetypes that we do. And they understood, in fact, the word in the Hebrew was Mitzrayim, which means they were born through this canal, and it literally means a tight, squeezed place, and into the desert. And they're taken care of. They are fed manna from heaven that they didn't particularly enjoy, and they cried, and they listened to Big Daddy Moses tell them what they should do, and as soon as he turned his back and went up to Mount Sinai, they had, you know, put signs down on the boulevard and said, party, and they broke all of the rules, and so when Daddy got home, there was hell to pay. But eventually they got it together, as much as human beings get it together. And they partnered, they had families, they had conflicts, they had troubles, and they came to another river, a river that they could not cross, but their children could. It's the story, again, of every man and woman, conceived in the darkness of a womb, born, taken care of, rebelling, testing, putting it together, and trying to live a life. And trying to live a life so that when we come to that next river, we have given something to our children and our children's children that will carry something of ourselves, because we cannot physically go to that next land. These are universal stories, and so often we ask the wrong questions. We ask about the facts. Did it happen like that? Was there an exodus? I can tell you there's virtually no archaeological evidence for 600,000 people, that's the biblical number, spending 40 years bivouacking on the Sinai. There were no 7-Eleven wrappers, no McDonald's wrappers. The archaeological evidence is not there. It's a story about truths, not facts. Do we know that Jesus had a Holy Week the way it's described in the Gospels? We don't. But it's about truths more than it's about facts. And these stories are told with a lot of the same images. You take, for example, just the Seder plate, and Passover begins tomorrow night, and it commemorates freedom, and it commemorates on the Seder plate there is a lamb bone, and you have the sacrifice of a lamb marking the doorposts of the houses in Egypt with the blood of the lamb so the angel of death would pass over. Blood of the Lamb, Agnus Dei, the Lamb of God, in the Christian version where Christians are saved by the blood of the Lamb. You have a cup of salty water, symbolic of tears, shortest chapter in all the Bible, and Jesus wept. You have a bitter herb, reminding people of the bitterness of slavery, and you have the sweetness of the apples and dates and raisins, reminding people also of the sweetness of life. And you have an egg on the Seder plate. And somehow there's no relationship with bunnies and eggs in the Jewish tradition. The biology gets a little strange in the Christian version where a bunny gets involved with an egg, but there was an incomplete understanding of mammalian development, I guess. But it's the egg that's the important part, because it's the miracle of life. It is out of something that seems to be hard and dead that life pops out. It's a metaphor for how insistent, persistent, life really is. And it's a symbol of hope in all those traditions. The story goes on, and the two stories converge in terms of numbers. You have the 12 children, the 12 sons of Jacob, and you have the 12 tribes of Israel, and you have how many apostles? 12. You have the 40 days of the Noahic flood. You have 40 years wandering in the desert. You have Moses for 40 days up at Mount Sinai, which for those of you that know Cedar Sinai, that's a really good HMO. And you have Jesus reenacting that by 40 days of meditation in the desert. These are not accidentally thrown together numbers, just as the stories are not accidental in the Passover story and what leads up to the Easter story. You have Joseph being sold from a cave and a pit for money by one of his brothers to arise at the side of Pharaoh, to then be at the side of the Pharaoh when his brothers and his tribe need to be rescued. And the words used in Hebrew scriptures is that Joseph offered his brothers a good salvation. in red wine. Boy, that gets picked up again. Now, just out of curiosity, of all of his brothers, which one sold him? Judah. This is starting to ring a bell. You have Jesus sold by Judas, going into the cave, arising out of the cave, and saving his people. The stories are parallel stories about betrayal, about despair, about hope, about how all of us at moments can feel that we are in the pit, but the story is not over. These things parallel story for story. I do a whole semester on the parallels, so don't get scared. I won't do that now. But it's fascinating to me that we celebrate these universal themes in the course of this week. We celebrate how it is that human beings live on this planet, how it is that we go through all of the emotions from welcome, rebellion, partnering, hope, despair. All of these are appropriate for people who are paying attention and really trying to live examined lives. And our job is not... I'm interested in the facts. I am interested in biblical archaeology. I'd like to know what really happened. But I am more interested in the truths, more interested in what is universal in our traditions of how we gather together and, as Brad said in his opening words, how we are connected in time, how religions give us two things. One is a story that begins before our birth, as we go out onto the desert running our lap in this great historic relay race and try to pass to the next generation the baton of our wisdom, of our folly, of our hopes, of our frustrations, and give them something of use. And the other is in time. It is what we do now while the sun shines in this moment. That the messages of Passover, of Easter, of Eastover, are we are all on spiritual journeys. And they don't go straight ahead from success to success, from accomplishment to accomplishment. We all trip, we all stumble, we all lose faith, we all question what it is we're doing if we are intellectually and emotionally honest. And then we pick ourselves up and remembering that we fell, remembering that we scraped our knees and broke a bone or two, when we see that other person stumble, we remember to reach out a hand because we know our own imperfections and we know our own strengths. And so we try to repay in real time the gifts that we have received of love, of comfort, of confidence. We know that the path is not straight, and a life without bumps and scrapes is not a life that has been lived. And so we come together celebrating the fact that we are alive. We are alive with our hopes, our frustrations, our achievements, our failures, our folly, and our wisdom. And we come together to share all of those things in a human community that is made up of all of these things. We are not perfect. A terrible shock. I can see it in your faces. We are not perfect as a community. We are made up of real people. And as real people, we help each other. We support each other with our eyes, with our brains, with our souls, with our passion, with our hearts, and with our hands. And we look and we choose and we search for those things in every church, in every synagogue, in every mosque and ashram and tradition that has something that we as individuals will find nourishing. And when we are nourished, we have the impulse to share. We come together to be together, to share together, to grow together as a community and as individuals. And our faith is that we can't completely separate those two things. We are on a principled search for truth and for meaning together.